You know, one of the goofy things I'm doing is setting out all my jewelry to see who I think would like certain pieces. And it's a joy for me to see that, you know, my daughter-in-law is going to get one of my rings. And I can see the light in her eyes when I told her that. So it's not all about them. It's about the joy of giving, really.
Welcome to Speak Up for Your Health. I'm your host, Dr. Arkell Giorgio. In this podcast, I have conversations with patients about how they found their voice, figured out how to advocate for themselves, and finally got the care they needed. Today's episode is particularly special. Roxanne Gailey is a friend and my financial advisor. She's been so incredibly supportive of my patient advocacy work, has shared my book with dozens of her clients because she believes so strongly that protecting your health requires just as much discipline and focus as protecting your wealth. At this moment, Roxanne is just 68 years old and protecting the final weeks of her own health. Roxanne was diagnosed with metastatic pancreatic cancer less than a year ago and is now receiving hospice care. I visited Roxanne at her home a few weeks ago, and of course, I felt incredibly sad. But Roxanne wasn't spending her final days being depressed or feeling sorry for herself. Throughout this journey and in these final days, she's focusing on how every last detail will play out. I left our visit feeling surprisingly uplifted by Roxanne's strength. Enjoy the show. Roxanne, thank you so much for doing this. I know that this is a tough time for you, and you have chosen to give this gift to the listeners of this podcast and everybody else that may be going through a journey like yours. So thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Yeah. You received a diagnosis of pancreatic cancer in May of 2023. Mm-hmm. And just to start, I'm wondering how you just felt when you were told that diagnosis.
Yeah. The really bizarre thing was that we had taken our RV trailer up to the Smoky Mountains to do a great deal of hiking and just sightseeing at the end of May. I did have a physical scheduled at the Mayo Clinic. And so about 10 days after doing this hiking trip, I ended up at Mayo to do the physical. And the last test that I had to do was this PET scan, or I guess it's called a CAT scan. And I had absolutely no worries about the results. I had hiked 6 miles. I had been healthy through the year. No unusual side effects. And so at the end of that physical, I was called back in and told that I had tumors on my pancreas, on my liver, and other locations. And quite honestly, I think as many people would feel, I couldn't believe that based on the fact of how I was feeling. So I was really put into some kind of a shock, if you will, and then kind of moved on to, wow, what do we do about this?
Yeah. Oh my God, what a shock that must have been. I know that you probably had lots of conversations with many different types of doctors about what treatment you would have and how aggressive you wanted to be. I'm wondering how you decided how aggressive to be, because there's a whole range. You could choose to do everything. You could choose to do nothing, given that it was advanced. I'm wondering how you made that decision.
I have 3 sons. And to just decide not to do anything, even though I was told right then and there that this was a terminal diagnosis, I didn't feel that I could just say, I'm not one of those people that could come through this with not maybe just a year, but maybe 5 or 6 years or maybe more. So I came to the conclusion that I needed to do something for my sons and my husband.
Yeah. So you did it for your sons and for your husband. And how did that feel for you? Is that what made you feel like it was the right thing to do?
Yeah, I mean, I was nervous about it. Going through chemo, radiation, any other type of surgery or procedures is definitely not what anybody wants to do. But to just give up and say, no, this is too much for me, really wasn't an option for me to take.
Okay.
And so I did go into it with, you know, a heavy heart, but something that I thought could give me a chance to live more than 1 or 2 years.
And so since then, you've had several rounds of chemo, the first two rounds, my understanding is, didn't work as well as they could have, or maybe you didn't tolerate them.
That's right. And actually, the second treatment was working. It was reducing the cancer, but I ended up having a toxic lung issue and was hospitalized for 6 days to try to get that cleared up, which it did clear up, but it did take away my one ammunition that was working for me.
Okay.
So that was really, really depressing, actually.
I'll bet that must have been so hard. And then, Roxanne, when did you develop the back pain that ended up being the tumor had spread to your spine?
Yeah. So when I was early diagnosed, they could see this on the T4 vertebrae, but it was very, very, very tiny. It hadn't gone anywhere in frequent looks at it. It had stayed stable until I would say it was towards the end of January when they did an MR exam and said, oh my goodness, something's going on here that isn't good. We've got to take a deeper look at this. So I would say end of January.
So at the end of January, they saw that shadow that was maybe on your spine early on really was a metastasis, a tumor in the spine causing back pain. And you had some treatment for that, I think, some radiation treatment.
Right. I did go through 10 days of radiation. They thought that radiation would sort of pummelize the tumor and dissipate the cancer cells. But they did say then after going through those 10 days that the cancer was winning. And so, yeah, there was more infiltration into the spinal cord and eventually into the spinal fluid, which is what they're really worried about.
So it was right around that time that you were actually offered the option of having back surgery to take the tumor out of your spine.
Right.
And I'd like for you to share how you thought about that, because I know you got all the details about it. You ultimately decided not to have it. But could you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So, you know, when I went into the ER down at Mayo Clinic, the actual really well-known spine surgeon was on call for the weekend, which was really fortunate for me. He's extremely well-known, has a great reputation, has done many, many hundreds of these. And so I ruminated over that, had another MR, and he said, yeah, we could probably help you, but it would be about a 3-week hospitalization and some difficulty in recovering. A lot of side effects could happen. And I'm not sure that is something that I wanted to do and take away the time that I had with my family. There was a lot of worry about the recovery rate from a big surgery like that. So I took some time, talked to that surgeon, decided that I really, really didn't want to go through that difficulty of recovering.
Yeah. Roxanne, do you need to sit down? We can take a break if you want. If you need to sit down or shift or something. Roxanne's progression from feeling absolutely fine in May 2023 to being in hospice about 9 months later is not unusual. Pancreatic cancer is extremely aggressive, and Roxanne already had metastases when she was diagnosed. And regardless of treatment, on average, only 1 in 10 people with metastatic disease survive longer than 12 months. So it was really a gift that the spine surgeon was honest in telling Roxanne that the surgery might only offer her a few extra weeks. This was the information she needed to decide how to have the best quality of life for whatever time she has left. In these terminal situations, doing less is not about giving up. Doing less can often achieve more. At this point, you decided that you didn't want to have that aggressive surgery. You didn't want to have operation recovery that would take away some of the quality of life that you had left. And you decided to transition to hospice.
Right.
That word is really scary to a lot of people, and I'm wondering how you felt about that.
You're right. I think it is a really scary word and something that I've heard many, many times, but never really understood what it meant. And when it comes down to it, it means that you are in a terminal stage of life and the physicians aren't really able to do much more for you. So yeah, it's a scary word, a word that I didn't really know a lot about, but am learning kind of every day what it means.
What I want to transition to is the real reason why we're having this conversation, why both you and I thought that it would be important to have. It's not about pancreatic cancer and the difficult diagnosis that you have, but it's more about talking about how you have had and maintained to this moment such a positive attitude throughout this journey. And it was inspiring to me when I talked to you, and I just wanted to hear from you how you've maintained such an optimistic outlook.
Oh, well, I'm glad to hear that it comes off that way. You know, all of us are going to die, right? I'm just turned 68, so I don't consider myself in that elderly space, if you will. And I have been really, really blessed with a great husband and three marvelous sons and wives. And this has been more of an unfair situation to them than to me. And so to try to make this less unfair to them, and mostly because I've had a really wonderful life, I've done everything I've wanted to do. I've been blessed to have opportunities that other people never have. I wanted to make sure that whenever I'm with them or around them or listening to them, that I come off as someone who's very joyful for their joy. And I would really, really hope to live a longer life. But my pain, if you will, my pain comes from, you know, losing their pain in babysitting or playing on the floor with my grandchildren or taking them to the parks or, you know, even doing some big trips with them. That breaks my heart that I can't do that. And so when I am with them, I try to be hopeful, be happy, just share the joy of what we're doing at the moment.
Yeah.
And I guess that would be my answer to that question.
Yeah. Roxanne, I know that faith is a big part of your life and your family's life. What role has faith played in this journey?
Yeah. So I have kind of a quiet faith. I'm not one that wears my faith on my shoulder. But I have been very active in, you know, Bible reading, you know, enjoying a prayer session, praying daily, understanding that Jesus will walk with me to the end. I do believe that he is with me. And I'm not afraid of dying. I think that being with Jesus on a day-to-day basis gives me that peace and that comfort. And so, yeah, I do really have quite a deep faith, and it has helped me go through this really unknown period. I mean, I don't know how much time I have. And so That's another difficult part of this journey is it going to be a month? Is it going to be 3 months? And I just have to have faith that God will be there each step of the way, and I'll make it to the end without any great pain or any great sorrow. Yeah. That's kind of where I am with everything right now.
Yeah. And, you know, faith plays such a big part in how we experience our entire life, including how we experience the end of life. So I'm sure it's been really powerful and really important.
Yeah.
Getting a little bit more specific about how optimistic you've been, when I was visiting you, what I wasn't expecting and was, again, almost a little surprising was how much active planning you've done around making sure that your grandchildren remember you, making sure that your funeral is completely planned and you're completely in control of it, which doesn't surprise me knowing you for as long as I have. So wanted to talk a little bit about that. You created a video where you played the piano and shared your story with your grandchildren. And I'm wondering why you did that.
Yeah, so my grandchildren are 2.5 to 9 months old and will really only know me through memories of their parents. And one of the things that I've done all my life is play piano. And so one of my daughter-in-laws asked me if I wouldn't do a recording of the piano playing just so that the grandchildren can hear and see that that was one of my really beloved hobbies, if you will. And so I did that and told a little bit about my story of my life. And, you know, it's mainly just to kind of give them information about who I am.
So I hope when you hear the piano, you'll think of me. That's been such a big part of my heart, and know how much I love all of you. And hope it brings you some peace and joy when you get a chance to hear it. Love you all so much.
And then as far as the funeral planning, I am a planner, and I know that once somebody dies, you know, the treadmill starts pretty quickly. And I am a little bit of a control freak. I think my family and friends would admit to that. And so I just jumped on the bandwagon of what is it that they would have to do if I'm gone. And so I planned my funeral service. I planned my celebration of life. And I know how difficult that time period is when someone passes away. So I wanted to take that off their desk, if you will, and do as much as I could do. And surprisingly, it ended up being kind of, I don't know if I would say fun, but it ended up being a joyful way of letting people know who I am and letting the people in my life know how much they mean to me.
Yeah.
By really placing them in certain scenarios. Like I have 10 honorary pallbearers that I want them to know how important they are to me, other than somebody else telling them that. So,
wow.
Yeah, I did jump on board and do the planning and actually felt like that was the right thing to do. And just one of a couple of tasks that they don't have to worry about when I'm gone. Just lightening the load for them.
Yeah. When you're doing all that planning, I would think that it would be a little scary, but it sounds to me like you said that it was really empowering.
Right. Yeah, it was. And there are certain things I wanted people to know and to hear. And so I was able to include that and make sure that that got done.
How has your family responded to all of this planning? I mean, you didn't do it in a vacuum. You included them in the conversations. But boy, that's a hard conversation to have with your wife, with your mom, with your mother-in-law. How have they responded?
Yeah, I think they maybe were a little surprised that I jumped in and did all that. And they might have decided that that was too much for them to be involved in at this point, because I started that way back like 8 months ago and have been doing it bit by bit ever since. But nobody pushed back and everybody supported me. Yeah, they helped me along the way. You know, one of the goofy things I'm doing is setting out all my jewelry to see who I think would like certain pieces. Even things like the purses I have, I'm setting those out. I'd like my family to benefit from some of the gifts I've had. And it's a joy for me to see that, you know, my daughter-in-law is going to get one of my rings. And I can see the light in her eyes when I told her that. So it's not all about them. It's about the joy of giving, really.
You know, what an experience you're having that most people don't have. You get to see what it feels like for somebody to keep a part of you while you're still living.
Yeah.
Whereas most people just imagine what that may be like. And that's a gift in some ways. I mean, we all wish that this wasn't happening to you, but
yeah.
But there are some positives. What's the most important or surprising thing you've learned about yourself during the last 8 or 9 months?
Oh, that's a hard one. I think I'm pretty strong. There's been a lot of pain, which I've had to kind of work through and try to deal with. Physical pain, I would say. I don't have any mental pain. I would say that that's maybe a surprise, but the physical pain is across my back and down my spine. And sometimes it's very difficult to deal with, but I've been lucky I haven't had any mental pain, and I attribute that to my faith. What I think my family would consider a strength. I'm not sure. Maybe the fact that I can love so deeply would be the strength that I have for my family.
Yeah. Wow. And when the day comes that we're celebrating your life, what do you hope that people say about Roxanne Gailey?
That she loved deeply.
Yeah, I'm sure we will. We know that when you're alive, and we know that when you're no longer going to be alive. And so I am sure that that's going to be what we say. And as we close, I just have one last question. If you were giving advice to someone who was going through something similar right now, what's the best piece of advice that you could give them?
I would say the best piece of advice would be to surround the people that love you. Be surrounded by those people. That's what has kept me going. That's what I've asked for. People will say, "What can I do for you?" And I will say, "Just come and be with me. Come and sit with me. Come and talk to me." Just surround yourself with those people that love you, because they will bring you comfort. They'll bring you peace and joy. And you'll be surprised at the amount of giving you will get. If you've ever been a taker, this is the time to take it, because it's there for you and a huge gift. So I guess that would be my answer to that question.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that that's such great advice. But I would also say to you, Roxanne, that when I came and visited you just last week, I have to tell you that you gave me so much by just making me be less scared about the inevitable that's going to happen to all of us at some point.
Yeah.
And so thank you for that. Thank you for being open about it. You weren't taking, you were giving, or giving as much as you were taking. You gave it to me, and I want to thank you. I know you're giving it to everybody else that's surrounding you. You deserve it. And we love you. And we want you to enjoy every single moment that you have. And we'll also remember you as a person who loves so deeply.
Thank you for your friendship, Arkell. It means the world to me.
What a gift and an honor that Roxanne gave me some of her precious time to talk so personally about how she is living fully while she's dying. Her outlook made me a little less afraid of the inevitable end that we all face. My key takeaways from my conversation with Roxanne are: use every living moment wisely. Roxanne started planning her work transition, her funeral, and how her grandchildren could remember her soon after she was diagnosed, when she was feeling relatively well. Even if you're getting aggressive treatment and have hope that cancer treatment will be successful, take advantage of all the time you have. Address the details that give you comfort and control and will eventually decrease the burden on your family. Hospice is not something to be afraid of. Unfortunately, over half of all patients are only in hospice for 17 days or less because patients are referred so late in their illness. But as of the publication date of this podcast, Roxanne will have been in hospice for about 7 weeks. And studies have shown that patients in hospice actually live longer than those with a similar diagnosis who don't receive hospice care. This is because staff can have the time to get to know patients, their specific needs, adjust their medications, and achieve as much relief and comfort as possible. I'll put the link to the study in the show notes. Most importantly, live a life today that reflects how you want to be remembered. Roxanne is and will be remembered by her family, her friends, and her colleagues as a giver and one who loved deeply. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Speak Up for Your Health. It would mean a lot to me if you could take 30 seconds to do just two things. Number one, could you please follow or subscribe to Speak Up for Your Health? You can do this by going to the show page on your podcast app and pushing the follow or subscribe button that's usually on the top right-hand side of the screen. And two, could you please leave a rating and review? This will help so many more people find the podcast when they're searching for something valuable to listen to.
Speak Up for Your Health is produced and edited by Jenny Lee Park and myself. Music is by Alex Tepper. Cover art is by Sean Sutton. Marketing and social media is by Shelby Epstein. If you have your own story about finding your voice and advocating for yourself, please share it with me. I'd love to hear it. You can email me or find me on Instagram and Facebook. The links are in the show notes. Thanks again and again for listening. I hope you let your friends and family know about this podcast. It might help them the next time they have a health issue.